Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
This is Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And we're here to talk about a little football. And, you know, we had a great interview last week with David Weeks. And I just, as an old reporter, sometimes you get done with an interview and you find out later there was a question that you didn't know to ask that you should have asked. And I did not think to ask about the romantic life of David Weeks' boys. But it's big news this week.
You blew it.
Whit Weeks, we found out, is dating Landry Kiffin, the daughter of Lane Kiffin, the Ole Miss head coach. And, of course, this Saturday night, LSU and Ole Miss play each other.
Unbelievable. Well, I saw her picture. She's a cute kid.
Yeah, she is.
He didn't do bad.
He didn't do bad. So, but I didn't know to ask David that one question and everything. So, but she did say she's going to be pulling for the Rebels. So I don't know how close the relationship is yet or not.
You know, her little trivia about her, you know that Lane's, I guess, is still his ex-wife. I heard they got back together. Her mother is the mother, her father, his Lane Kiffin's ex-wife's father is John Reeves, who was the Florida quarterback.
Okay.
After Spurrier.
Yeah.
He was assistant coach at Florida. He was a great player at Florida.
Oh, yeah. He was, there was some receiver named
Carlos Alvarez.
Yeah, who was his top receiver. Those two guys, it was like Beasley and Sullivan. They just tore up defenses all across the SEC. I remember him.
I just always thought that was interesting that, anyway, those two were married, but anyway.
Well, that's cool. Well, that LSU Ole Miss game is going to be a big one. What time do they play that game?
It's at night.
It's a night game? So it'll be opposite
I'm pretty sure it's a night game.
I don't know, because I know the Georgia-Alabama game, obviously, is a night game.
I think it
may be a 3:30 game.
You're right.
So, but anyway, it's going to be one of the, this is a big weekend with college football games.
Well, it is. And none bigger, the Presbyterian College Blue Hose.
Oh, man, what did they do last week?
The only undefeated college football team in the state of South Carolina. They beat Bluefield, which I've researched them. They're from West Virginia.
Okay.
Beat them 76-3. Bluefield. They got Morehead State coming in this week from Kentucky. So we'll see how they do. But
they must be using their NIL money wisely up there at Presbyterian.
They're doing something. There were several things going on. You mentioned what's the Kiffin girl's name?
Landry.
Landry. That's
yeah.
Right. And Whit Weeks. I was going to mention some things I wanted to mention, but I don't want to talk about. Number one, the Atlanta Falcons. Pitiful. Terrible.
I did not watch one play.
I watched a little bit. It was awful. A couple of Auburn things. In addition to losing the heartbreaker at Oklahoma, Bruce Pearl retired this week, which was, it's football season, so we won't get too deep in basketball. And Rudy Johnson, former Auburn running back, passed away today. He had I don't know if you remember, he played 1 year. He was a junior college transfer.
Okay.
He played 1 year in year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the year he scored the winning touchdown. Auburn beat Georgia in overtime over there in Auburn. And we all got back home at 6 in the morning. Remember that game?
Vaguely.
He was on that team. He rushed like 1,500 yards his 1 year at Auburn. He was a great player.
Oh, yeah. And then played with the Broncos. Is that right?
He played mainly with the Bengals.
Bengals. I knew it was something with the B, yeah.
But
And he was only 45 years old. I don't know any circumstances about it.
There was some mental issues.
Yeah, that's too bad. But how do you feel about Bruce Pearl now? I mean, he was kind of a polarizing figure, very popular wherever he coached, and everybody else, I think, hated him. I don't know.
I sort of liked him. I'm not the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more into the football thing, but, you know, his son's the guy. He's
going to
be the coach.
Is Bruce going to go into politics? And that's the thing. That's the scuttlebutt. I don't have any inside information. I don't know at all.
I don't either. I've heard that, but then I've heard some people I thought were kind of credible say he was not.
So. Okay.
But anyway, it's been fun with him there at Auburn.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we're not a basketball school anymore. Well, maybe we can beat Texas A&M this week. We'll be a football school.
Well, let's talk about that Auburn loss to Oklahoma. And I frankly, when I saw the play that Oklahoma scored on, and saw, I said, that's cheating. That should not have counted.
Well, I saw Venables, you know, they asked him about it in the press conference. He said, well, we asked the referee. He was standing right there, whatever. And, okay, if you're an Oklahoma fan, that's fine. But the SEC issued a statement that it should have been a penalty. It should have been called back. So if the ref told him something, he was wrong.
Yeah.
The refs made a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I know coaches can do that sometimes when they have a trick play. They'll tell the officials before the game to be alert to it so that, you know, if you see this something doing weird, it's because we want to do it that way. And evidently they did that. But that should have sent up red flags. I mean, because, as they say, if you're faking a substitution, that's just unsportsmanlike. Now, you said there's a name for that play.
There is. We almost named our podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say it was...
Well, it was a joke, and it's a long story, but I refer to that as the Lonesome Polecat play. Every youth football team I ever coached, we had a Lonesome Polecat play, and that was our trick play, and typically it was something like that.
Okay.
You know, so I love to run the Lonesome Polecat, but I hate it when somebody runs it against me. You know? But that was one of those games that, and not to sound like an Auburn homer, but it just didn't feel like the refs ever had complete control of that game. It just, there were a couple calls that were just...
Well, I did not see the fumbled, was it a touchdown that was called back or nullified because of the fumble?
Oklahoma fumbled and Auburn picked it up and ran it for a touchdown, and they said it was an incomplete pass.
Okay.
So it wasn't really a fumble, which it may have been the right call, but it was so close.
Yeah.
I can't believe that it was called a touchdown on the field and then they reversed it.
Yeah.
It was one of those deals. It's kind of like tie goes to the runner, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how they overturned it. But Auburn, if Hugh Freeze is the coach that Auburn fans want him to be, they'll win. I've said it before the season started. If they can get to that off week, they got an off week next week before Georgia, with only one loss, they'll have a chance to beat Georgia. And that might be a big if, but if they got Georgia at home, they could somehow win that game, and all of a sudden everybody's talking about them as a playoff contender.
Well, now, what did you think about the quarterback getting sacked 9 times?
Well, I got an opinion on that, too. And I'm not a coach. I hate to sound like I'm a fan that thinks I know more than I do. It appeared to me, Blake, and I don't know, you said you didn't watch the whole game. They told him their game plan was, you stand back there. We're not going to try to beat these guys with your legs. You're going to stand back there and you're going to throw the ball down the field. He had run the ball, the quarterback, Jackson Arnold. He'd been very successful running the ball in the first 3 games. It looked like to me he needed to either throw the ball away or he needed to run a half second sooner than he did. On just about all those sacks. I mean, there were sacks. Oklahoma sacked him 9 times. But there were on half of those, he had great time. He had plenty of time to throw it. He stood back there too long.
That was my impression, too. The times that I saw, he just held the ball way too long. And so I don't know about him as a runner and everything, whether he should have been running. But I'm not so enamored that I think that Oklahoma pass rush is that great or the Auburn line is that bad. Yeah. They just had to hold the blocks for so long. I think that was a big factor in that. And he's got to do better on that going forward. Now, I'm assuming they'll adjust their game plan playing Texas A&M this week.
Well, again, not trying to say I'm not a coach, but, you know, they had like 14 penalties. They had what you and I were just talking about with the, you know, not getting rid of the ball, not running, not, you know, standing back there and getting sacks. And then they had a couple of most folks would say were bad calls against him. If you eliminate that, I think they watched that film, they got to feel kind of good because those were self-imposed kind of things. I think they can correct.
Yeah.
I had a day to lick my wounds. I'm pretty optimistic about next week. What are you thinking about?
Well, let me ask you for one last point on that Oklahoma game. We saw now that John Mateer, the quarterback, is out with a broken hand for about 4 weeks. So just as Oklahoma maybe has a chance to feel good and feel like we're coming back, that means he'll miss the Texas game, I guess.
That's right. Well, I don't think, if I was an Oklahoma fan, I'd be happy to be where they are, obviously. But I'm not sure. You know, everybody's talking about Mateer as a Heisman candidate. I thought that was premature.
I did, too.
But you just got, like we talked about last week, you got a lot of teams in the SEC that right now feel like they have a chance. Oklahoma's one of them. Auburn hopefully still got life. Missouri, Vandy, you know, obviously Texas, Tennessee, Georgia. Those teams are going to start knocking each other off, and it's going to get interesting.
That's right. Well, you were about to ask me probably about the Georgia-Alabama game coming up Saturday night.
You've been thinking about it all.
Yeah, week. And it's the first time Alabama's been here in 10 years. I think 12 years. I think 2013 maybe. Or 2015.
Year before
Kirby came on as the head coach. And the last two times Alabama came here, it was like they exposed Georgia. They really did. And those were one-sided Alabama wins. And since then, of course, it's been nip and tuck every game. Every game literally could have gone either way. Even the one over in Tuscaloosa in 2020 was a close game until the end of the game. And then, of course, you look back at last year's game, the way it ended, Georgia could have won that game if the receiver makes the catch on the pass on the fade route in the corner of the end zone. And I think he made a tactical error in getting behind the defensive back. He should have stayed in front of the defensive back and used his height to the advantage. But that's, again, that's me trying to be a coach, and I'm not a coach. I think it's still going to be a hard game for Georgia to win. I mean, I've been really impressed with Alabama's quarterback, Ty Simpson. I mean, he is so good. Kirby says when he watches him, the ball never hits the ground. He's right on target. He's got good receivers. They've got a good offensive line. They protect him. You put those two things together, and that's dangerous. You saw what Joe Aguilar did in the first quarter against Georgia with his pinpoint passing. Now, if Georgia can get a pass rush, if they can put some pressure on him, then they've got a chance to disrupt him some. But that's going to be real critical to the game of getting that pass rush. And then they're going to have to score points just like they did in Tennessee. This is going to be one of those games you probably have to get into the 40s. Who knows, maybe the 50s to win the game. They're just too good to stop to really shut down each other.
I agree with you. And I think the home field will be big for Georgia. You know, most of those, you know, that 9 out of 10 that Alabama's beaten, a lot of those have been on a neutral field.
Right. They played in Tuscaloosa that one time, and then, of course, they've been in the SEC championship several times, and obviously the national championship game the one time that's the one that Georgia won, the only one they've won since Kirby's been here. But they've been close every time. I was in Atlanta in that 2017, after the 2017 season, and Georgia had a 13-point lead in the game, and we thought we were going to lose in regulation, but the kicker missed, and then we thought we were going to win in overtime, but then Tua made the great pass to on 2nd and 26, and it broke our hearts, and it was a long ride home after that. So it will be a big game, big atmosphere. Fans will be keyed up. It's going to be one to look forward to. And I understand you got you some tickets now. You're going to get to go.
I looked out. My buddy Jake Lindsay, he watches our podcast. So Jake hooked me up.
There you go. Good deal.
Jake's in Rotary with us.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with this year. But it's just one of those things. It's almost like we talked about a couple of weeks. You know, you think about Georgia play, you know, the series with Auburn and Tennessee and Tech and Florida, they've dominated over the last few years. So you just think maybe it's time for one of those teams to beat them. Well, in the Alabama series, I almost feel like this might be Georgia's team.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, because they've really had their number, and they really didn't have necessarily a better team always, but they just somehow beat them head-to-head. But
well, a loss would hurt either team. Certainly, if Georgia loses, it would be like, okay, DeBoer still has that Alabama mystique over Georgia. And if Alabama loses, you add that on top of what they did with Florida State, and then the pressure's back onto him going forward, and he really has a small margin of error going forward. Now, I don't think he's going to get fired. I don't think that's going to happen. It's just too early in the process for that to happen with him over there. But we'll see.
But he could really boost his whatever with if he beat them.
And speaking of firing, we had another firing this week. Oklahoma State got rid of Mike Gundy. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm a man.
That was 18 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, he's more than 40 now.
He's older than me.
He's going to get a $15 million payout. How do you feel about those kind of contracts where you have to pay the coaches so much when you fire them?
That's just the going deal. It's just so much money now. I don't think people care.
Well, the agents are wise to be able to get those kind of deals for their clients, and it gives them some job security. And in this profession, there's not a lot of job security.
That's right.
Kirby's now, is he number two in longevity in the SEC? Behind only Mark Stoops at Kentucky?
Yeah, that's right. And behind them, it's not even...
Oh, yeah. I don't know who's next in longevity. Beamer's been at South Carolina about 4 years. And how long's Kiffin been at Ole Miss?
So I think this is his fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
Speaking of buyouts, I think... what do you think about the Gators? Billy Napier looks like he might be on his last leg.
I don't understand what has happened with his offense. I mean, they really have a good defense.
They do.
They were in that game with Miami until late, and then I saw this week, I think they had a defensive back who's out for the rest of the year, one of their key defenders. They've been able to play on that side of the ball. They just cannot score. And DJ Lagway does not look like the same quarterback.
He doesn't. He's such a good-looking athlete.
Yeah.
He just runs out there.
Yeah.
You just think he would be the guy. You know, if you were picking teams on the mm-hmm. playground, he'd be your guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about, you know, the SEC, the good teams kind of picking each other off. I think South Carolina might might be one of the ones that kind of.
Yeah, who are they playing this week? They're playing
Kentucky.
Kentucky, that's right. Well, that's maybe. Kentucky hadn't lost this year, have they?
Yeah, they got beat.
Oh, that's right.
Somebody beat them first game of the year, right?
Well, they beat Toledo. I remember that game. But anyway, those are a couple of, quote, bottom feeders. I saw an interesting headline this week. It said that Vanderbilt and, who was it, Florida have traded places, and Virginia Tech have traded places. I mean, Vanderbilt is right now where Florida usually is, unbeaten, riding high, big wins, lots of points, and you have to reckon with them when they come to town now.
You got to be ready. A couple other games. Notre Dame going to Arkansas. That's
yeah.
Arkansas has lost two heartbreakers in a row.
I tell you, that loss to Memphis was huge. And, you know, you can't say they were looking past them to Notre Dame. It's a big thing when Notre Dame comes to your campus. Obviously, I mean, it was big for Georgia when they came here, and was that 2019, I think. And this will be a big game for Arkansas. I think Arkansas has a chance to win.
I kind of do, too. I hope they do. I can't help but like Sam Pittman.
Oh, yeah. He was a great guy when he was here at Georgia. And you know, they've been so competitive and so close. I just don't know.
You know, I'm full of useless trivia. You know where Sam Pittman played college football?
I do not.
Pittsburgh State.
Pittsburgh State.
In Kansas? They're the Gorillas.
The Gorillas.
I know that.
There's not many gorilla mascots, are there?
I know that because Presbyterian College played them in the playoffs when I was in college.
So that was the Blue Hose against the Gorillas.
The Gorillas, yeah. That was... I don't know if Lee Corso was picking the... You know, if he had the headset. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, there's another big game that's not the SEC this weekend. And is it Oregon? Weren't they playing at Penn State?
Penn State, yep.
Is Penn State a pretender again?
Well, I don't know, no, really, but I sort of like James Franklin. But I'm kind of like we talked about, I think, earlier, and you said, you know, he's got to show me.
Yeah.
I think they beat Oregon, some people.
Well, Oregon has looked great so far. Nobody has come close to them, and they have just really dominated their opponents. Now, it's not like they play great teams necessarily, but they're forced to be reckoned with. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Now, that's going to be right up against the Georgia-Alabama game, so I'll be sitting there in the press box. I guess I'll have my tablet with the Oregon game on so I can watch it or something.
I'll tell you an interesting game. Mississippi State, Tennessee, going to Mississippi
State. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know everybody's not giving Mississippi State a second thought. They're 4-0. Tennessee's going down there. I don't think Mississippi State will win, but it'll be interesting.
Well, they have a lot of confidence. A team that's 4-0 certainly has confidence, and they believe in themselves, and that's something they didn't have last year. What did they win, 2 games last year?
I think so.
So they believe in this, and they haven't won an SEC game since 23, I guess. They didn't win one last year. No. They're 0-4 in the SEC. So that's another thing. They want to get that monkey off their back, and I know they're fired up down there. They'll have those cowbells going. And
well, like you said, getting to 4-0 is huge. It's just like Auburn this week. You know, if you lose to Texas A&M, you all of a sudden got a self-esteem problem. I think you're doubting yourself, you know. And then, you know, and they, again, there's a lot of teams that are just right there. I think are really good, but they all aren't going to win every game.
All right, sure. Good deal. Hey, we want to talk about some high school football, too, and we'll do that when we come back here on Sidelines and Headlines.
Like us. Share us. Thanks for watching.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
This is Sidelines
and Headlines.
Hey, we just want to let you know, if you want to reach out to us, we've got an email. You can send it to sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. Sidelinesheadlines, no ampersand in between, @gmail.com. And we'll look for your feedback. Love to hear from you.
We're on YouTube,
Spotify, Apple, most of your popular podcast apps. So look for us wherever and share us with your friends and tell them about us and spread the word. So I was at the Prince Avenue game Friday night. They beat Westside out of Augusta. It was a 59-34 game. Westside out of South Carolina, Anderson, South Carolina, and beat them 59-34. This was the first time Westside had played here against Prince, but they came to Athens back in the 60s to play Bernie Harris High School, the old black high school here in Athens, and they played that school 4 different times, and Bernie Harris won twice and Westside won twice. The last 2 times, Bernie Harris won the game.
Well, was Westside either the school or the precursor of black school before integration?
It was.
Anderson.
And I don't know what T.L. Hanna was. Both of those are the two public high schools in Anderson County up there. But Westside was a predominantly black school. And they came and they played a lot of schools in Georgia. And I was actually able to find an old Banner Herald article that reported on one of those Westside Bernie Harris games and saw some names in there. I recognized James Pete Fair. He used to be an umpire in the local league here. Aaron Hurd, I recognize that name, playing for Bernie Harris. And it was, I think Westside won that particular game 18-6. And Bernie Harris had like 2 long touchdowns called back by offsides penalties that could have changed the outcome of the game. But
once again, I'm full of useless trivia. T.L. Hanna High School in Anderson, South Carolina. Did you ever see the movie Radio?
Sure, I did. Yeah.
That was based on that. And when I was in college, at Presbyterian College, I went up with a friend of mine to watch them play. And so I knew about radio.
Before everybody else had.
20 years before everybody else knew about radio. But, and the guy that was the head coach at T.L. Hanna, Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
The guy that went to, he actually went to Mercer University.
Okay.
And that was,
Well, Jeff Heron, who coached at Oconee County, Prince Avenue, Camden County, Grayson High School, coached, I think, maybe 1 year at T.L. Hanna, was a head coach up there, out of state. So a lot of connections with that school up there. But Prince Avenue was ahead of the whole game, but the West Side just would not quit. And they had a freshman quarterback. Name is Bear Woods. His brother, Cutter Woods, is a freshman at South Carolina as a backup quarterback there.
Oh, that's right.
Bear's a 6'4", left-handed freshman. He hadn't filled out yet. He's thin, but he can throw the ball, and he's going to be a good quarterback. And he kept them competitive in the game, and they stayed with them throughout. But it was a big game. Ben Musser, the Prince Avenue quarterback, had a big game, and so did Andrew Beard. He rushed for a number of yards, and C.J. Dockery caught 7 passes for 87 yards, and Hudson Hill caught 2 touchdown passes and threw a touchdown pass. So he had a big night. Hey, congrats to Josh Alexander, 100th win as the Athens Academy coach.
I forgot about it. That was his
win number 100.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Against Commerce.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I like Athens Academy's team. I think they're going.
They got a good program. Good program.
Yeah, there was a time, you know, 30 years ago, when Athens Academy they probably wouldn't thought they had a prayer against Commerce.
Oh, I know it.
And I look back at the Georgia high school historians; they've beaten them. It's like 500 the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's kind of flipped. There was a time there that the private schools had a tough time beating the public schools, but beginning back in about 2015 or 16, that began to flip. And then you saw Eagles Landing Christian Academy dominated the Class A division for like 5 years in a row as a private school, and it just began to flip. And now you've got where they have their own separate championship. And they do play into the regular season. I'm glad they do that. This week, Prince goes up and plays Hart County. It's always good to go to those community schools and see the fans turn out. And they'll be there for Hart County. They're not having a great year. They're 1-4, but it's the only game in town, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. And those counties where you got one school in the county, I mean, it's the only game in town.
So Jackson County's got 4 schools, and 3 of them are doing well, including East Jackson, which this week is ranked for the first time ever, number 10 in the AJC rankings. But as you just mentioned, they got to play Hebron. So Hebron's the number 1 team, and they just had a big win over Blessed Trinity at Blessed Trinity and leapfrog up into number 1 in the Class A ranking. So it's going to be interesting to see what they can do. Now, there's one other unbeaten team in that region. That's Franklin County, uncharacteristically 5-0, and has averaged 52 points a game in the last 4 games.
Franklin County probably hadn't been 5-0 since.
Well, I don't know when they've been. Yeah, it's been a while. So it's, and of course, they're excited up there, I'm sure.
Oconee beats Stevens County. They're at Cherokee Bluff.
Mm-hmm. I think North Oconee's off this week, aren't they?
Let's see.
No, they play. They play for Scythe County. I can't remember.
They're at Cedar Shoals.
At Cedar Shoals. Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's right.
Cedar Shoals lost a close game. They lost to Walnut Grove. North Oconee was off this week.
Walnut Grove kicked a field goal late to beat Cedar Shoals 9-6. Cedar Shoals is just so close to getting that first win in 2 years. I'm really hoping they get it soon.
I know them and Clark Central have had a rough first half of the season. They're just scratching and clawing.
Clark took it on the chin against Jackson County. Yeah. Big loss last week, 64-14. First time Jackson County to ever beat Clark Central. And so that was a big win for them, but a big loss for the Gladiators. And they're just, I guess that can happen at a school, a public school. You know, you can't go out and just necessarily bring in players every year. And sometimes you just get caught between classes and don't have the horses, so to speak.
They play Appalachia this week, interestingly.
Which got their second win of the season last week.
Yes.
So, and, of course, normally you'd say that's automatic for Clark Central. But who knows this year with the way things are going. But anyway, that's it for the high schools. We'll be back more and talk about some more in the colleges right here on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
Sidelines.
And Headlines.
Hey, big night in the SEC. They're going to announce the schedules for next year. They've already announced the 3 permanent opponents. Georgia has got Florida, Auburn, and South Carolina. And Auburn has who?
Vandy, Georgia, and Alabama. Which, in years ago, you'd have said Vandy, that's good, but maybe not.
Yeah, that's right. So that's interesting. Now, they said these are not what they call permanent opponents. They are annual opponents, and they will reevaluate
every 4 years.
And then they're going to come out with a schedule here soon. It'd be interesting to see how soon it's going to be before Georgia goes over to Texas A&M. All the fans will say, we hadn't ever been to College Station. I'm not sure you want to go to College Station the way the A&M Aggies are playing these days.
You might not want to.
Yeah.
That's an interesting place. My son is going to see Auburn plays.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Well, One reason I did not see as much of the Auburn game was I could not take my eyes off of the train wreck that was Clemson, South Carolina.
You Georgia fans, y'all have a thing about Clemson, don't you?
Hey, it's a great rivalry. I can remember back in the 60s, it wasn't that big of a rivalry. But when Danny Ford, actually Charlie Pell, was the one who first made it a rivalry. And in 1977, they came to Athens, and the score was 7-0. And Georgia scored really late and decided to go for two. And they got a penalty. And I think it was like a 15-yard penalty. Well, instead of trying to kick an extra point and just get the tie, Coach Dooley stayed with it, tried to go for two, and did not make it. And Clemson won the game. And for thereafter, that was a close game. Georgia and Clemson, always a great game.
For the next 15
years. Yeah, it was always a great game. And, you know, I really enjoyed playing them every year because they're close and it was a competitive game. And I'm fine that we don't play them every year now, but I'm glad we do play them on a periodic basis and everything. But now, did you see where Fran Brown and Syracuse, they got fined for faking injuries in the game?
What's up with that? He learned that from Kirby when he was at Georgia?
I don't know. You know, he does. He gives Kirby a lot of credit. Just about every interview I've seen it, but lately Kirby's name comes up and he just says, Kirby, thank you so much. He said, Kirby, thanks for the note you sent me. Kirby, thanks for everything you did for me while I was at Georgia. And I was reading about it, and Kirby actually, apparently, Fran had more access to everything Kirby was doing than he normally would as the defensive backs coach. And Kirby said, I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to teach you how to be a head football coach. And he really impressed the Syracuse people in the interview. And of course, they won 10 games last year. And, man, they're looking like they're the real deal this year, too.
Well, yeah, and I'm good for him. I'm not sure about the fine on faking the injuries. But tell me, you know, You've been a media guy. You know, the media is different now with social media and how everything's under scrutiny. What do you think about Dabo and his reaction to what's going on? I mean, he's a different character. I mean,
he always has been a different character.
He's right in a way to say, hey, we've been great, you know, whatever. But in a way, it comes off kind of childish.
Well, in a sense, he's in new territory.
Yeah.
I mean, the last time he struggled like this was before he put Clemson on top of the heap. I mean, for several years there, Clemson, you had to go through Clemson to win the national championship. They played for it twice, and they won it twice.
Yep.
Well, played for it and lost twice, but won it two other times. But then, as things changed, and whether it was NIL or the transfer portal or I don't know what, he just hasn't been the same. Now, people always say, if you give him a generational quarterback like Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson, he's hard to beat. And apparently Cade Klubnik is not that guy. And there's even rumors that the backup guy may get in this week. Who knows? But he's under pressure, and he feels that pressure. And some of it's just self-imposed pressure. I don't think they're going to fire the guy.
No.
But he's not happy with where they are.
Well, that was kind of my question. I don't think they're going to fire him either. And he's right. They've been successful. I mean, what are they going to do, run him off? Is it really going to be any better for him if they run him out of town? But is his reaction to all that, I mean, does that almost somehow maybe make him more likely to think about, hey, we might need a change?
I mean, I don't think it would. I don't know that an athletic director or the board of directors over there that would make those kind of decisions would necessarily let social media be the thing that determines their decisions. But social media certainly is more prevalent these days, and it's more in your face, and you can't go anywhere. And, of course, talk radio was always a thing in the past. People would get on talk radio, say, it's time to fire the coach and all this, and now they get on social media, and it's exponentially spreads that much quicker, and so coaches are more under the gun, so to speak. So, I think it's
his reaction to it. Again,
he looks a little petulant. I think a word that you would use to describe him, and he's just defensive. So we'll see. And I don't know what's wrong with him. I really still think they have a good defense. I just don't know about their offense. And
Well, the defense, you know, you can kind of make an argument they're not playing great.
No, they're not.
But it's hard for a defense to be great when the offense is not helping you out.
Yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. You're right about that.
Tech going to Wake Forest. You would think they would win.
Yeah, I think so.
If they're kind of who we think they are, they'll take care of business. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, we're getting close to the halfway point of the season. They're undefeated too.
Well, they're a real threat now in the ACC, and you got to look at them. And Miami is still unbeaten. Let's see, Syracuse, did they lose a conference game? No, they're unbeaten in the ACC. Their loss was to Tennessee.
Yep.
Florida State, of course, is still unbeaten in the conference. Is Virginia unbeaten in the conference? They might be. Of course, it's still real early.
But Miami, I don't know if you said Miami.
Yeah, Miami definitely unbeaten in the conference. And so we'll just have to see that. But that's a big game for Tech up at Wake Forest, and I feel confident they're going to do the job. Let me ask you, I saw, of course, this is Kirby's 10th year, and they're coming with the Alabama game coming out. Mark Schlabaugh did a kind of a personality retrospective looking back on 10 years of Kirby at Georgia and had, you know, said basically he's been the best coach over those 10 years in college football. And, you know, it'd be hard to find anybody else that you would put up against him. It was, could say he did better. He won two consecutive national championships, and he's won three SEC championships, and they played for another national championship. A couple of things that struck me about the story. Number one, it looked like, from reading the story, Kirby gave Schlabaugh some personal access, which to me, strikes me as unusual from what my perspective. He's not one to give personal access to the print media. Schlabaugh does work for ESPN, but it's their print version that he works for. And to my knowledge, I don't know that he's ever done that with local media. I don't know that Mark Weiser has ever had a sit down with Kirby, and he's the beat writer for the Athens Banner.
You talking about access for that piece or access over the
access to say, Kirby, I'd like to sit down with you for an hour and talk to you. And I don't know that anybody's ever been able to do that outside of the people who pay for that right with their television rights. And, of course, I'm an old print guy, and I don't like that. That's my one complaint about Kirby, is that he's not really forged any lasting relationships with the local media. Now, maybe he has that I don't know about, and maybe I'm off base here. If I'm so, I apologize and everything. But I was just interested to see that. Now, Schlabaugh did a great story, and I encourage you, if you hadn't read it, to go and read it. He talks about how Kirby's changed some and how he's he hasn't exactly mellowed, but he's learned to delegate more. He's learned to give out assignments to his assistant coaches and let them do their jobs more. He led with the fact that if you walk down Lumpkin Street on a day that they're having practice, you're liable to hear him on that microphone cussing out his players on the field. And she said he actually led with a woman came up to Kirby and said, thank you. My daughter wants to thank you for graduating. She always walked by and when she was having a tough time at school and said, at least I'm not a football player. So,
Did you see, I don't know if it was an old interview, but I saw the guy, I think his name is Brandon Lee, they call him Hometown, the guy that does it, he's on 680 in the mornings. And anyway, he was interviewing Champ Bailey.
Okay.
About playing with Kirby. And it was just funny, you know. Champ's in the Hall of Fame. He can say whatever he wants to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's kind of a cool customer. And he was just talking about Kirby. He said, you know, he'd be the one, and we'd be in the defensive meetings, he'd be telling us all what we were doing wrong. He said, Champ, it was funny. He said, Champ said, Kirby, you know, he's just kind of a different guy. He said, you know, to be honest, he's just kind of an asshole. But he said, it comes from a good place. And I think that's true. You know, he looks a little different on the sideline than he did in the beginning. You know, those first few years, you look at him, you're like, this guy ain't going to make it 10 years because he's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he was trying to – it didn't matter if it was the punter, the offensive lineman, whoever. When he came off the field, he was trying to coach him. I mean, you just – as a head coach, you can't –
yeah.
With everything else you got going on, you just can't do that forever.
Yeah. Well, he said he thinks he Kirby told Schlabaugh that he thinks he held his assistants back in the early years from them being able to fully – do their jobs. There's interesting quotes there from Mary Beth Smart his wife, who played here at Georgia as a basketball player. Also, Glenn Schumann, the defensive coordinator, who's been with him all 10 years, only assistant who's been with him throughout that time. So it's an interesting profile, and I found it interesting. I learned a few things about Kirby, and I'm proud he's the Georgia football coach. I think he's done a great job, and I don't know that anybody could have done any better, and it's probably the best thing Greg McGarrity ever did, to hire him as the head football coach at the University of Georgia.
Well, I've heard people around town, and I'm not a Georgia guy, I haven't been in Athens a long time, but I've heard several people who I trust their, what they think. They say that the time window with Kirby as the head coach at Georgia is not as long as people think it's going to be.
Oh, really?
They don't think he's going to. I think Georgia people in their mind think this is going
to be
a 25-year deal, and it's not.
So will he last as long as to the same age Saban did, for example? Because Saban was 70-something years old when he retired.
I mean, that's 23 more years.
Kirby's 49, I think. Yeah, so he hinted at that in that profile. He said, I'm going to keep going, but he said there's some other things I want to do, but I'm going to do something. So we'll see how that pays out, and then we get to that short list of who's the guy to follow him, and it won't be an enviable position to do. So, hey, I ran across a list this week. These are the top 10 Heisman Trophy candidates on somebody's list. I want to see how many of these you can even tell me what team they play for, much less tell me anything about them. Here's number one. Now, you may get this one. Fernando Mendoza.
I'm supposed to know that. Tell me.
He's the Indiana quarterback.
That's right.
Indiana quarterback. He had a great game against Illinois, 21 of 23 passing. He's number one on the list. Number two, Demond Williams Jr.
Is that Demond Williams from Sanford and Son?
He
That's Demond Wilson.
He's a quarterback for Washington.
Yeah.
6 out of 19 passing with 298 yards last week. Here's number three, Eric McAllister. TCU receiver, 8 catches, 254. Dylan Riley. Boise State running back. He's replaced the guy from last year. Chandler Morris.
I told you you were going to make me look.
See, Virginia quarterback, 23 of 31 for 380 and 4 touchdowns against Stanford.
Where are all these guys on this list?
Jaden Mayava. Now, I thought you might get this one. He's the quarterback at Southern Cal.
Oh, yeah.
Georgia went after him when he was at UNLV and entered the transfer portal, and they couldn't get him to come here. He's 20 of 26 passing. Robert Henry Jr. You won't know this one. Texas San Antonio. He's a running back. Mac Harris. South Florida defender, had 10 tackles, 2.5 for loss, 2 sacks. Wayman Jordan, Southern Cal running back, 18 carries for 157 yards. And how about this one? Trinidad Chambliss. You might get this one.
Who's he? I've heard his name. I can't place him either.
That's the Ferris State transfer who's come off the bench the last 2 weeks and led Ole Miss. He was 17 of 27 passing for 307 yards in their dramatic win over Tulane.
What happened to the guy that, obviously we know what's been going on with Arch Manning, the guy at Ohio State that everybody said was going to, the receiver?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Is he hurt or something?
That's a good question. I'm drawing a blank on his name. We talked about him 1 week because I had a great story about his dad and everything. I don't know. Maybe they just hadn't played any big-time games yet. I don't really know. They played
Texas,
but I don't remember him doing much in that game. Maybe that he just doesn't have a good quarterback. Julian Sayin is the quarterback up there, and he's a freshman, and maybe he's having growing pains, just like Bryce Underwood at Michigan is having his growing pains. But I read that list of those names. Most people were just like you, Jim. They couldn't name anybody off of those lists, and it just goes to show you that the Heisman Trophy race is really just wide open. I think the popular pick has been either Carson Beck or John Mateer. And Carson Beck, he had a pretty pedestrian game against Florida. And then Mateer now is hurt, going to be out probably 4 weeks, and that's going to set him back in any kind of Heisman camp. Plus, to tell you the truth, when his game against Auburn, what I saw, he did not impress me too much in that game.
Well, the thing about that list for me, and the thing I told you about him earlier, it's just way too early.
Yeah.
You know? And you don't, I'll put Gunnar Stockton's name in with some of those guys.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about Heisman discussions, they do irritate me this time of the year because there's just, you've got such a small sample size to evaluate players, and there's so much to come, and who knows. I used to vote on the Heisman.
You had a vote?
I had a vote probably 4 or 5 years that I was able to vote.
What time period was that?
Well, I voted back in the early 70s, probably from all the way through 83. I think I had for about 12 years I had a vote in the Heisman. And my rule of thumb was I voted for the first best player I saw. Now, I didn't have to see him in person. If I saw him on TV, like I voted for Tony Dorsett. And I didn't see him in person, but I saw him on TV, and I said, he's the best player in the country. But I voted for Andy Johnson one year in 1971 when they lost to Auburn 34-20.
That was the 35-20. Pat Sullivan,
that's right. I voted for Andy Johnson that year because I thought he was the best player I saw that year. So typically I would vote for some like that. I think I voted for Garrison Hurst the year he didn't win it in 92 when he should have won it.
He should have won.
Was that Gino Toretto that won that year?
Remember, and then they played Alabama in the bowl game. Alabama killed them.
Yeah.
You voted through. That was my era when I was a kid growing up. You know, not to get off on something totally different, but I've heard people ask, you know, what's the biggest thing that changed college sports more than anything? And my answer to that would be, tell me if you agree, was the racial integration.
Oh, yeah.
And I just look back, when I became a fan, you said you voted from 70 to 82. I mean,
that was the time period.
I mean, Billy Sims, Tony Dorsett, Earl Campbell, I mean, those were some cool dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were just, you know, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of new, too. And then
Johnny Rodgers at Nebraska, yeah.
I mean, those guys were, you know, just a different level of athleticism, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, we saw Georgia in 69 went to the Sun Bowl. It was like just barely got in and played Nebraska. And that was the Nebraska team that won the next two national championships. And it was 30-0 after the first quarter.
So Johnny Rodgers was like the sophomore?
He might have been a sophomore, yeah. It was a funny thing about that game out in El Paso. There was a clock malfunction in the first quarter, and it took longer than 15 minutes of clock time to play. And Nebraska did not need any extra time to beat that Georgia team that year. It was a one-sided loss.
Well, I know we jump all over my ADD kicks in and my useless trivia. Speaking of Heisman winners in Nebraska, Mike Rozier, he won in 83, the Heisman in Nebraska.
I don't think I voted for him. That would probably have been the last year I voted. Maybe, no, in fact, that's the first year I didn't vote because Herschel won in 82, and I think I voted for Herschel every year, 80, 81, and 82.
Well, Rozier came down and spoke to the Macon Touchdown Club. It's been 12, 15 years ago, and I drove him, me and my son, he's a big Auburn fan, going to College Station this week, and he was a little guy. He was probably 10, 11 years old. We drove him from Macon back to the Atlanta airport. And Mike Rozier, I don't think, was the best role model. I mean, I thought he was going to impart some wisdom on my son on the way back. I mean, he was a kind of a, you know, different kind of guy, let's just say that. But anyway.
Sometimes when you get to know those guys, you're a little disappointed, aren't you?
You are.
Well, they're just like, they're human beings. They come just because they have athletic ability doesn't mean that they're high character, necessarily.
Anyway, it was just an interesting, just to say it's an instant ride from Macon to Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of big games this weekend. Do you want to pick any games? Alabama, Georgia, who's going to win?
I think Georgia, as I said earlier, I think it's just time. I think they're at home. I think, you know, just based on what we know, I think they're probably a little better.
Well, I sure want Georgia to win, and I'll pick them. How about that Ole Miss LSU game?
I'm going to say, that's a coin flip, but I'm going to say LSU. I think LSU might be.
I think Ole Miss is going to win the game because I'm not sure LSU has really been tested. I mean,
they played
Clemson, who, that's the luster's off on that, and they didn't. Florida certainly was not as up to standards as usual. So I'm not sure that they've really been tested. We'll see about that one.
And the game's at Oxford, too, correct?
Yeah. So Auburn, Texas A&M.
Well, I shouldn't pick my team, but I'm going to say Auburn. I have hope. Again, I said earlier, if Hugh Freeze is a coach that Auburn fans want him to be, they will win this game. They got an off week next week, and we'll go in that Georgia game with hope.
Well, I think Texas A&M's going to win. Okay. How about Oregon at Penn State?
Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon for me, too. Let's see. Is there another big game this week that we've left out there?
I think Texas is going to beat Wake. I think Tennessee. I think.
Oh, yeah. I'll pick Tech over Wake Forest.
I think Notre Dame probably beat Arkansas.
Yeah, I pull for Arkansas, though. I'd love to see Arkansas get an upset win. And
I would, too. I'd almost love to see – I'd like to see Mississippi State beat Tennessee, but that might kind of mess up the pecking order a little bit. But that'll be an interesting game.
Well, I don't know if that really affects Georgia one way or the other because they play both of them. So, you know, you got to figure strength of schedule is going to be a factor on down the line somewhere.
Yeah.
But let's see. Indiana – or certainly had a big win last week where they clobbered Illinois, 53-point spread. I don't know if they're for real or not. They didn't show up in the playoffs last year, but they had a good regular season. We'll see about them. Missouri, are they playing this week? I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah. All right, good deal.
Let's see. Vandy plays Utah State. Missouri plays UMass.
Ah, okay. So a couple of couple of walkover games there for that week.
That's why I didn't have them written on my
list. Of course,
list.
Vandy, you would think back in the day that wasn't necessarily a walkover game, but the way they're playing now.
But just think, they're going to win again.
Can you imagine a world in which Vanderbilt plays in Atlanta for the SEC championships?
That would be hilarious.
It would be just so amazing.
It'd be fun.
It would be. It'd be tremendous. And what would they be able to keep Clark Lee as their coach after that? I don't know.
We might be trying to get him to Auburn. Hugh Freeze doesn't get that picture.
What is this? How many years is this for Freeze?
His third.
Third year. They're not going to fire him after this year, are they?
I don't think so, but I just, you know, they really need to, you know, the last 2 years, they just, you know, even though they were rebuilding and all that, they just lost some games that were just kind of ugly. And
yeah.
And I think everybody's just hungry for them to.
Well, the only two coaches that look like are hot seat really are Napier and Pittman. And Napier, I'm not sure that's even he can save his job at this point. I just don't know. Pittman maybe could with a strong finish, but we'll have to see. So. All right.
Well, we talked about the media and the perception about people, and I hate it. Billy Napier's probably a great guy, but you just see him on camera, and he just looks defeated to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I just hate it for him. He's gonna get a big bite.
You know, I got fired, and I didn't get a big buyout. Not anything like that, I guarantee you. Man. All right. Well, so you going to a high school game Friday night?
I'm going to try. We got some people coming into town for the Alabama game.
Okay.
So I may have to.
Going to do some tailgating Saturday?
We're going to do a little tailgating. Oh, one more thing. I know we got to go. You know the crazy guy, Roll Tide Willie?
I don't.
The guy he's like a social media sensation.
Okay. I missed him somewhere.
Anyway, you got to go. You got to go online and look Roll Tide Willie. This guy's crazy. Anyway, I was texting with him on social media, or his handler, trying to get him to come to our tailgate Saturday. I don't think he's going to come.
Oh, okay.
But you don't appreciate it. You need to go. We can talk about him next week.
So where's your tailgate going to be? Do you know?
Down, it's really not mine. We're guests. We're people. Down near Legion Field, Baxter and Lumpkin, right down there.
Okay.
The bottom of the hill. It's a great spot. What about you?
Well, I'm in the press box, so I really don't do much. It depends on where our family gets together, because I have kids in town for the game, and we'll just hook up somewhere, and usually we get a bite somewhere at a restaurant, or as opposed to trying to tailgate. It's pretty complicated doing all that stuff. And
well, I'm more in favor of those kind of tailgates that were just a true tailgate.
Yeah.
Bojangles chicken on the tailgate of my pickup truck.
I tell you, for years we had a great setup. First Presbyterian Church had a little courtyard. Now they've since built over it and enclosed it. It doesn't exist. And we had some friends who bought reserve parking there for the whole season. And so as a result of the benefit of that, you could use their little courtyard as a tailgate. And you had bathrooms right there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great. If you wanted to bring a TV, there was electricity. You could set all that stuff up. You didn't need a generator. It was fantastic, and it was always just great, and a short walk to the stadium. So I got spoiled with tailgating those years doing that. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, there'll be a lot of tailgating.
Yes, there will be. This will be a packed house on Athens on Saturday night. It's going to be a busy weekend. I wonder where the Alabama football team is going to be spending the night.
I don't know. I think
they probably try to keep it secret.
They did. I think I've heard Ray Goff tell the story in '76. They stayed at the Holiday Inn and didn't somebody students come down and keep them awake?
Blowing the horns all night long. Supposedly. And I'm sure the police. You complain to the police. What are the police going to do?
Right.
We're going to go out and stop these Athens boys from blowing horns? No, I don't think so.
Well, I think it worked. Georgia whipped.
Was one of the most electric atmospheres I've ever seen in Sanford Stadium. That was a 21-0 win by Georgia. And after the game, being on the sidelines about to go in for the press interviews, it was just like the emotions were just rolling down onto the field. It was quite electric.
I've heard it was crazy outside the stadium Saturday
yeah.
night. Saturday
oh, it
night.
Was. It was.
Hey, one more quick thing. I know we got to go. The game, was it Coach Dooley's first year or second year? The flea flicker game. Were you at that?
That was his second game.
You were the
second year.
High school then,
I was in high school. I was sitting in the high school bleachers. Where the upper deck is now and the president's box, they used to have temporary stands there. And for $2, you could get in there as a high school student and watch the game. And so I was there watching that game and saw it live. And I'm trying to remember, that wasn't a different game, but I was there for that game and saw it. And it was quite an atmosphere for that game.
You know, Kirby Moore that threw the pass was the quarterback. He was a lawyer down in Macon. A group of us used to eat lunch down in Macon at Baldino's Subs every Tuesday for years.
Yeah.
I really
– Well, you know, of course, Pat Hostin caught the pass, and he lateraled it to Bob Taylor, and Bob Taylor scored. It was the only touchdown Taylor scored that year.
Really?
And he was a great tailback, but he broke his leg, a horrific break, at the Florida State game. They played in Tallahassee and lost like 10-3. And it was like a year before he even walked. That's how bad the break was. And so that was a tough, tough loss for them. They lost to Florida State, and then they lost to Kentucky. Right after they'd beaten Michigan, up there in Michigan, in Ann Arbor. Got into Sports Illustrated, came back, thousands of students there at the airport to meet him.
And then they beat Alabama?
Well, they beat Alabama first.
Okay.
Opened the season with Alabama win. And then maybe beat Vanderbilt after that. And then they went to Michigan and beat them up there.
Well, I heard maybe more amazingly than the flea flicker, which a lot of people said Hodson's knees were on the ground.
Yeah.
Of course, Georgia fans, you didn't see that part. I know y'all. But actually, the thing was, Georgia, they were so prepared and so ready, they ran a – well, did that tie the game? They ran a two-point play to
– They ran a two-point play. They were down by one. And so they ran a two-point play to go for the win. And one by one, 17, 18-17.
I've heard people 18-17. Say that's when people figure out, you know, New Vince Dooley was a good coach because they were prepared. They had the play.
Yeah.
We got to run a two-point conversion. We know the play. And they've got it.
Well, there were pictures of that flea flicker in Sports Illustrated the next week. And Hodson's knees are down as he's laddering the ball. But that's a stop action. That's not a film. And Bear Bryant on his TV show the next day apparently was complaining that it should have been called down when Hodson caught the ball. And, you know, if they'd had replay, who knows what they would have done with that play. And that's, did the coach, is that one of those plays that Dooley said before the game, we're going to run this play, look out for it? I don't know.
Well, if you've been watching college football long enough, your team's been the, you might have gotten screwed on one of those, but you probably got the benefit of one of those.
Oh, I can talk about a Tennessee game in 1968. And I thought about this in relation to the SEC admitting that the call against Oklahoma was wrong. In 1968, Georgia played at Tennessee, season opener, was winning 16-15 when Tennessee scored late. Now, either the touchdown or the two-point conversion that enabled Tennessee to tie, one of those, the ball, if you're watching TV, clearly bounced. It bounced into the receiver's arm, but they called it a touchdown. Well, no replay then. It stood.
Yeah.
On Monday morning, I'm watching Channel 5 TV, and they come on with a news break. The SEC Committee for Fair Play has announced that they have reversed the decision and given Georgia the victory over Tennessee. And this was on a news break on Channel 5 News. Well, it turned out it was a hoax. There's no such thing as the SEC Committee for Fair Play. And Channel 5 bit and actually put it on the air.
What year was that?
This is 1968. And put it on the air before, and not many people saw it. I'm a college student in between classes, happened to be watching TV and saw it. And
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, so they got snared by a practical joke.
So 68, that would have been a few years before your buddy Bill Hartman was.
Yeah, Bill was still at UGA at that time. He was still a student at Georgia at that time. So yeah,
that's kind of like a Louis Grizzard.
Yeah, that is. That's a true story. And I put it in the book when Coach Drew and I wrote about the 1980 national championship season, because when they played Tennessee in 1980. That was the first time they'd played Tennessee in a while.
Yeah.
And so 68 was the first time they played Tennessee in a while. Now, I can also go back to the 73 game when Condridge Holloway was leading and led Tennessee to a comeback. And Andy Johnson hit a toss pitch to Glenn Harrison. Harrison misses it. It bounces off the turf. It acts like a great fake, and Andy goes around the end for the winning touchdown. And I was standing in the end zone and had a perfect view of the play as he came in, and Georgia won that game.
That wasn't Conridge's last year, though, was it?
I don't know if that was his last year or not. The artful Dodger is what they called him. Hey, we've done a lot. We could go down this deep rabbit hole forever and ever.
I was about to bring up Jimmy Streeter. Remember him in the late 70s for Tennessee?
Yeah, I do. What about Richmond Flowers, the hurdler? We can go on and on with just all kind of names, dropping names. Oh, boy. Listen, hey, folks, we gave out our email address earlier, sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Let us know if you got some comments, some suggestions. Hey, I hope you liked the interview with David Weeks. If you'd like to see more of those, we'll try to get them. We got Russ Tanner booked for next week. We're looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I'll say sayonara, and let's see what happens on Saturday night. It's going to be a good one.
Y'all have a good week.
Signing
Thank you for
off.
Joining us.
Blake Giles.
Jim Martin.
Goodbye. Good day.
Good day.
Good luck.
Night.